We've got a great program today, so we're going to kick right off. And let me introduce the two gentlemen. They're going to do a little bit of a tag team this morning, so I'll introduce them both, and then they will start and go through our program. We have about an hour and 40 minutes. And a great topic. Glad you're here this morning. Mike Miller, who's the Director of Business Development for Cataphrax. He's been there 8 years. He graduated from Colorado State and has done a lot of work, and most of the work we've done on grids, grid marketing and formulas. And Bill Chandler is the market analyst who covers the southern part of the United States for CalCrep and Stocker and the northern feeder industry. I've been with him 3 years. Also, I was a grain analyst and worked for ADM for a number of years prior to Cataphrax. So we've got two gentlemen that fully understand the topic that's before us this morning. We're going to have time for interaction, for you to ask questions, and we think that's how we get the most out of these sessions. So I encourage you to participate as we go through this morning. So they're going to kick it off, and guys, let's roll.
Thanks, Tom. Well, before we get started, let's make sure that we're all on the same page. We expect to have a little interaction today as we go through this this process. I know, based on some of the people sitting out here in the crowd, that there's an awful lot of experience in grid marketing. This is a subject that we're always trying to learn more about. The challenge that we have with grid marketing, formula marketing, is that it changes all the time. We're looking at differences and moving parts in this industry all the time as it relates to this method of marketing. Let me also say one other thing before we get started here. We had an opportunity before we put this program together to visit with a few of you about what your expectations might be for this session. I'll tell you that we're going to be pretty basic to start the session today. We still have an awful lot of people in the industry, a very high percentage of the people in the industry, that have been exposed to grid marketing to a certain degree, but still don't understand a lot of the very basic components of what makes grid marketing work. And so that's kind of where we're going to start this morning. We do expect by the end of this morning, or the end of the presentation this morning, that we'll be a little more complicated. We're going to talk about some of the trends that are going on within the industry and some of the things that we expect to see in the future. So with that, we'll kind of get started here this morning. Maybe. And what do we have when we look at grid marketing? One of the biggest challenges that we think we have when we're talking to producers, we're talking to feeders that are working on some sort of a grid or a formula, trying to figure out the way that they are going to maximize their profit, is that it is very much a balancing act. There's a lot of moving parts when it comes to trying to fix your cattle on a specific grid or formula. We have the different components of performance in the feed yard, daily gain, feed conversion, the kind of cattle that you're buying. We've got the premiums, we've got discounts, we've got the base price that we all get concerned about, how that's determined. We'll visit about that here a little bit later on this morning. We've got premiums and discounts associated with yield grade, quality grade. We have a new component today that we didn't worry about too much until about a month ago, and that's the age of the cattle. And believe me, that is going to be an important factor as you look at the kind of cattle that you may be working with today. It's going to be something that you're going to have to be concerned with more in the future than you have been in the past. You know, right now we're talking about aging all the cattle once they get to the packing plant. And anything that ages over 30 months of age is going to get railed off. And believe us when we say that based on what we've seen so far, there's going to be some very significant discounts associated with those cattle that age over 30 months because of all the different things that we're going to have to do differently to that carcass than we do with all the others. So it's a component that we're now going to have to worry about. Another one that we'll talk about here in detail is carcass weight. So what we're going to do here this morning is we're going to give you a general overview of how grids get put together and the basic components in general of how they work. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about the cattle market and how it interacts with your decision on when to or when not to grid market cattle. We're going to talk about some of the developing trends, probably nothing totally new, but some of the different things that are going on within the industry as it relates to this subject, and then finally we're going to end up today illustrating some tools that that we have exposure to at Battlefax and things that we think will help make this job of trying to put cattle on the right grid, so to speak. Some of those tools might be helpful for you. One of the things that we find producers get wrapped up about when they're first starting to think about whether to or whether not to market on a grid is figure out what the target is. Does anybody really know what the target is? It depends. It depends. Depends on who you're selling the cattle to. Different packers, honestly, have different targets. Different alliances have different targets. Some want an animal that is going to grade 80% choice. Some programs want cattle that are going to be a very high percentage of yield grade 1 and 2. Some will reward you for not using antibiotics or hormones. So how do you sort through these numbers? How do you sort through all this stuff to come up with what's going to be best for your operation? The challenge is that it's different for every one of them. And literally, it just takes an awful lot of investigative work on your part to figure out exactly what's going to be the right program. So we've got a target for quality grade. Generally, I would say that we want cattle that are going to grade choice or higher. Generally. Not in all cases. And just because you know a little something about your cattle and you know that they're not going to grade 65 or 70% choice, that does not mean for an instant that you shouldn't consider grid marketing your cattle. That's not what that means. Now, maybe you should avoid certain grids or certain formulas, yes. But there's still probably some programs available out there today that may work for you. What's the industry target on yield grade? That one's probably a little easier. We generally want cattle that are going to be yield grade 1s or 2s, generally speaking. Okay? 3s in a lot of cases are acceptable. I would say that what we're really saying there is what we don't want are 4s and 5s. Okay? Not a lot to change there. Carcass characteristics. Really, there, what signals being sent to the industry is what we don't want. Okay? We generally don't want, in our fed, steer, and heifer mix, B maturity cattle. Okay? Cattle that are going to age over 30 months today. We don't want them. Dark cutters. Hard bones. Those kinds of things that typically carry a very significant discount. Now, here's a fun one. What's the industry target on weight?
Why are you laughing?
I would say that without question, and we'll illustrate this further, that if there's any signal that our industry has been sent that we have heard, it's to make them big. As it relates to grid marketing, the single biggest signal that we have heard as an industry is to make them big. And Jane Gibson, standing back there in the back, she works with all the people in the food industry, the food service industry, and they dearly love us for that, believe me. That's one of their pet peeves. That's one of their gripes about our industry, is that we make our cattle too big. And yet, that's the signal that's really being sent back through the system today. Very significant as we look at some of these industry targets. If we take a look at how this breaks down, generally speaking, what's green up here is what is generally acceptable and will typically carry some kind of a premium associated with cattle that are either prime. I've got CAB up here, but you could fit or substitute CAB with any other kind of premium program that might be available out there. Cattle with grade choice. You get down in here to select, and I've got it yellow because in some cases that's perfectly acceptable on some different programs. Generally, we want cattle that are yield grade 1 or 2, yield grade 3. I've got kind of green and yellow here. Really, what signals are being sent is what we don't want. Okay? Very, very significant discounts associated with cattle that don't fit the program targets. And right here, we've got a carcass weight range, generally speaking, of 550 to 950. I would tell you that there's a lot of programs out there today that have an acceptable carcass weight upper limit of 1,000 pounds. You guys do the math. 1,000-pound carcass, what does that lie? That's big. And in a lot of cases today, that's acceptable. So we just need to keep in mind, and as you sort through these things, trying to figure out exactly where you might fit within the industry. Okay, how do they work? We get premiums typically for cattle that grade prime, cattle that are upper two-thirds of choice in a lot of cases. Choice, yield grade one, yield grade. I would tell you today that the trend in these premiums, we think, is that premiums for prime, upper two-thirds of choice, yield grade one, yield grade two, they need to get bigger. Okay? If we really want to send the right kind of signals back through the system, the premiums that we see today, generally speaking, need to be larger. Because what we're hearing today and what we're reacting to really aren't those premiums. We talk a lot about how we want to make cattle better. We'll show you something here at the end of the presentation that will illustrate that we've had this trend in grid marketing in this industry really growing for the last decade or so. Okay? In the last 6 or 7 years, we've changed the percentage of cattle that grade choice in this industry year in and year out by up or down 1 or 2%. We haven't changed them a bit. So is that the signal that we've heard? We know that based on the people that we work with upstream, they like choice grading cattle. They would actually like a higher percentage of that product on the market because they like using choice product. It's more consistent. It's better quality. People associate a premium product with that word choice. And yet our industry today is not quite getting that job done. So we think that some of these premiums need to be bigger in order for producers to react, for cattle feeders to react. And then, of course, ones and twos continue to be places where we do associate premiums. Now, this one's not in your book. I put this one in kind of late because I thought we at least needed it. You can't read it very well. But basically today, if you've got an $8 choice select spread, and generally speaking, you've got some premium in here for yield grade 1 and 2, basically a small discount for anything that's going to be yield grade 3. You can see the range on a per hundred weight and carcass weight, kind of range that we're talking about, in the kind of premiums that we can see. You know, here we've got a choice yield grade 1 at plus $7.20 versus something that's a select yield grade 4 that might be as much as $20 discount. Very, very wide ranges. We would tell you that the general trend in the industry is for the ranges around these premiums and discounts to be bigger, not smaller. Now, it depends on market conditions. What did we see happen when we got extremely current? Let's go back to October, because that was pretty fun, really. What did we see? What happened in the industry? It was really interesting. Well, we had a huge spread, okay, we had a huge spread, and yet we were gridding and formulating fewer cattle. Because our industry was making $300, $350, $400 a head, and there was no reason to take any risk associated with those cattle. Okay? Now, the packers, they were stuck. Okay? They needed the cattle, they weren't available. So, in certain market conditions, we forego all these premiums and discounts and just say, here, you have them. You take the risk. And that's one of the things that we need to keep in mind when we grid and formulate cattle, is that as producers or as cattle feeders, we are accepting another level of risk. Okay? We're saying that in order to be rewarded for the kind of cattle that we have, we're willing to take on that risk of how those cattle are going to hang up and perform after the high crop. Okay? And that's one of the things that people, if they're looking at grid and formula marketing for the very first time, they need to understand that. Because that first leap sometimes can be pretty risky, particularly if you don't know exactly what you have. But again, pretty wide spreads here. Our expectation is we're going to get wider over time. Again, we've talked a little bit about this before. Typically what we get discounted for, I've got select up there at the top, and again, I'll tell you that there are programs out there today that don't discount for select grade cattle, or it's very, very small. Generally, the way these programs work is if you take a $10 choice select spread, okay, and let's say that it's got the program has a grade base of 60%. Okay? You take 0.6 or 60% times $10, that's $6, okay? That's typically your discount for select grade cattle. Okay? The premium, the other $4, is what you get for choice. Okay? So if you do the math, you've got 100 head that grade 60% choice. Generally speaking, your net premium on the choice versus select will be zero because you basically hit the mark. Okay? So, and that's another part of the way a lot of grids work, and we'll talk about that here in a minute, is that typically you're being judged against a plant average. Okay? And that's one of the other challenges that you have to work through as you think through how you might or where you might want to market the cattle that you have. Big discounts for standard, fours and fives, anything that the packer's going to no roll. B maturity, dark cutter, we've got weight down there, and now we need to add age as another factor. Let's back up just for 1 second. We were talking about this, and this is probably a good place to talk about this aging of cattle and what it's going to mean. If you have today, and this is, again, this is still kind of in its infancy and it's kind of working itself out, but this is kind of the way that we've put the numbers together as it relates to how significant some of these discounts are going to be if you've got a carcass that ages over 30 months. The first thing that they're going to do is the packer's going to rail that carcass off. Okay? Now, right now, it sounds like they're only dealing with 1 or 1.5%, so it's not a big number. But we know that there are cattle being fed today that are more than likely going to be above that when it's all said and done. We've got cattle that are questionable on feed all the time, and some of those are going to be hit with a higher percentage of cattle that are going to fall out of that age. We think at least initially, if they rail them off, it's going to come with at least a $10 discount right off the top. Okay? So we're looking at $75 per carcass pretty much right off the bat. Okay? And now we go to the next step. That carcass could still be graded choice. It still could be graded. So you could actually get a little bit of that back if, in fact, that animal is choice. Okay? Secondly, they're going to look, and if that carcass is over 30 months of age, ends up being B maturity, now we're talking about $250, $300 per carcass. And ultimately, if it's C, obviously, it's just going to go with commercial cow price or cow carcass price. So we've got a very wide range that we're going to be dealing with, and depending on the other characteristics of that carcass, we're talking about $75 per head, probably at the low end to as much as $300 or $400 on the high end. Okay? So those discounts associated with those cattle that are going to be old are going to be very significant. And we need to be aware of that as we work through these things. I know that we've got a lot of people in the industry that right now are caught in a place they don't want to be. Okay, they know they've got cattle on feed that aren't ready to go, that are questionable. And we've had a lot of people say, well, what should we do? How do we handle this? I think the major packers in a lot of cases are going to convince you that you really don't want to bring them to the plant to begin with. That maybe you need to find some other place to get those cattle handled. But we've known, based on our conversations, that that's not easy. So we hate to stand up here and tell you that right now we don't know how that's going to shake out, but I'd be honest with you and just say we don't know how you're going to get those cattle handled, how you're going to get them processed. Because there's going to be probably a limited outlet for those people, maybe on some of the heifers that we know are going to be questionable that we've got on feed, maybe we just have to take them to a cow plant and see if we can work something out there to get that carcass closer to the fed steer and heifer market value. But, that's probably going to be something that we sort through over time. Other things to consider, and I think that these right here are, as we look at trying to maximize our potential on a grid, these are four things that you really need to understand. You need to understand how they work. First of all is freight. Who pays the freight? Generally, the feeder pays the freight. But that's not always the case. you know, that, depending on where your cattle are located, that can be a significant difference depending on the program. And there are differences in the program. So when you're evaluating different ways that you may market your cattle, you need to understand that component of what you're looking at. Because if you're involved in a program, or you can get involved in a program, maybe it's with a cattle feeder that has a relationship with a packer, maybe you can share that freight. Maybe the freight gets paid for by the packer. And it can be a big difference. How are we going to determine the base price? Okay? That's another significant factor. Now, I tell you right now that there is more discovery going on in base price determination right now than we've seen any time in the last several years. Generally speaking, what we feel to do today is we tie the starting point of the base price to some kind of a negotiated average in a region. We've got a lot of people that use the Cattle Facts 6-state fed steer price as a starting point. The negotiated Kansas hop is another one that a lot of people use, or the weighted average between Nebraska, Kansas, and Texas. There's a lot of different variations there, but they're all basically the same in that they're using the negotiated top or average from the previous week to set the price for this week. We've got a lot of people now that are looking at tying the base price to wholesale box beef prices in some form or fashion. Now, there's both pros and cons to making that move. One that I find really interesting, and a lot of people have said, well, gosh, you know, that's where we need to go, that's where we need to be, that's closer to the consumer. I tell you that if you feel uncomfortable at all about the price movement that we see in the fed cattle market from week to week, just watch the wholesale beef market and watch it move around and see how much fun it's going to be to try to determine where that thing's headed. There are many, many more games that get played with the wholesale box beef price than there are with the negotiated fed cattle average week in and week out. Now, that's not said to discourage anybody from looking into it, because we need to look into it. It's probably where we're going to evolve over time, but there are a lot of moving parts, a lot more moving parts that go on in the wholesale box beef market than the negotiated fed cattle average that we look at today. We'll hopefully find some happy medium, but we're going to continue to work on these things. There's people that want to price off retail. Based on what we know about retail prices today, I tell you that there is nobody today, Cattle Facts included, that can tell you other than a general trend of where retail beef prices are. Nobody. Not the government, not any industry source. Nobody knows exactly where retail beef prices really are. And it's because, again, you're talking about thousands upon thousands of retailers in individual markets moving their price on certain items around every single day to feature product, to clean up some product that they've got sitting around. Everybody's got a different list price on the same item in 10 stores in the same market. It's all over the place. Now, we can generally measure where they're going and feel pretty comfortable about the trend, but that's about all we can do. And you talk about having absolutely no control about the pricing mechanism that you've got to work with. Again, not that we shouldn't look at it, but that's something that's going to evolve over time and is probably further out there than the next 5 or 10 years, I would guess. But it's something that people will continue to look at and people want to explore. Quality grade based. I like fixed grade bases. Okay? Let me tell you why. And what I'm really talking about here is a plant average versus a fixed grade base. Okay? The problem with plant averages, I have cattle that grade 70% choice, and I sell them to a packer in the north. And I happen to go against cattle that week that grade 70% choice in that plant. What's going to be my premium for the choice cattle that I just sold it? Not very much. Yet, the industry average that week was 52%. If you include all the cattle that get graded that week, my cattle were that much better than the overall average, but because I sold my cattle in a certain market and went against a certain plant average, I really don't get much of a premium. Okay? And that's why I like the idea of a fixed grade base or something that incorporates more of the general industry. Now, that's easier said than done. There's not very many of those programs available today, but they are there. Okay? There are several programs today that you can be involved in that have a fixed grade base. Now, the challenge there is that's good for the producer. It's a little more difficult probably for the packer or processor to work with that. But again, it's one of those things that's available out there and at least looking into as you look to evaluate the different programs that are out there today. Weight limits. I had a guy who taught me quite a little bit about grid marketing early on when I was first getting started at Cattle Facts. He'd been doing it for several years, and there's different theories on grid marketing, but this was his. It was pretty simple. He said, I have a basic formula or grid that is a lot like everybody else's. I feed cattle that are pretty average, okay? They're not great, they're not poor, they're just pretty average. And what I do is I feed to the upper limit on weight. I try to have as few heavy weights as I can, but I want to make sure that I have a few to make sure that I hit the mark. And I also want to make sure that I've got a very small percentage of yield grade 4s to make sure that I got the cattle as finished as I possibly could. So I don't want to have a lot of discounts, but I want to make sure that I get just a few. Because I want to make sure that I maximize the weight that I can sell and market every week. And if I get that, at the end of the day, there's probably going to be a small premium because the cattle that I have, you know, they're going to probably just beat the plant average. I'm going to have a small premium left over at the end of the day. And so really what he was doing and what he was talking about is I want to feed them to the maximum weight that I can and try to avoid some of the real big discounts, but, you know, make sure that I'm getting the cattle done, okay? Now, we've got other people that have a different philosophy, but that was his philosophy as it relates to weight. And I think that that's one of the other things that you really need to understand as you're evaluating programs. The difference between an upper limit of 850 pounds and 1,000 pounds on a carcass weight basis is very significant. Okay? Just think about this. You're going to go out to the marketplace and you're going to bid against somebody else for the same set of cattle. Okay? He's going to feed him to 1,000 pound upper limit, and you're going to feed him to 850. Who can bid more money for the same cattle? Guy's going to feed him to an upper weight limit of 1,000 pounds. So it's another thing that you need to evaluate. We've had some people that have, through the course of time, tried to tighten that range up and maybe shrink it a little bit. It's difficult to do. Not saying that feeding them to 1,000 pounds of carcass weight is necessarily the right thing to do, but that is the acceptable weight limit in a lot of cases today. I think one of the things when you're evaluating programs is you need to understand and think through what your target is. Forget about what the industry target is. What's your target? Because I'll tell you today that you can take the kind of cattle that you have and find a program within this industry that will work for you. Almost no matter what, you can find some program out there today with a little bit of homework on your part that will give you some kind of reward for the kind of cattle that you grow today without making significant genetic changes, okay? And that means that you've got to make sure that if you're going to evaluate programs, you need to know what you're looking for. If you think your cattle or you know your cattle are grade a high percentage of choice, they tend to be pretty good performing cattle from a quality grade standpoint, then you need to look and sort through all those different programs. And there's a lot of them. if your cattle aren't going to graze 70 or 80% choice, well, there's a whole bunch of other programs that are going to reward those kinds of cattle as well. Natural programs are growing. They're not a huge part of our industry today, but you've got to evaluate those too, I think. Now, what they're going to do is they're going to reward you for not using antibiotics and not using implants and those kinds of things. They're not a big deal today, but they're out there, and there's people that are being pretty successful providing cattle and putting cattle into those kinds of systems as we speak. So I think that's another piece of the evaluation that we need to look at today. May not fit you, but at least take a look. And seek out a program that fits your cattle. Okay? And let me go back to that. One of the biggest mistakes that we saw early on, and I think that's changed, but one of the biggest mistakes that we saw early on from producers is they did this. There's a program, and I know that Fred down the road is involved in that program, and he's getting a premium for his cattle. Well, he's got a different genetic makeup than I've got, so I'm going to change my genetic makeup so that I can get cattle into that program and make sure I get a premium as well. And, you know, that genetic makeup change takes a little while. It's not something you just do on a dime. And we had some people that have made some pretty poor decisions over time. Or, you know, another case is that they make decisions on their clays for carcass characteristics only and leave out a big part of this that we haven't spent too much time talking about, and that's performance. It's still huge, huge factor. But again, those are the kinds of things that we need to think through as we're evaluating the hundreds of different programs that are out there today. Things you need to understand about the basics of grid marketing is that obviously it does not guarantee either a premium or a profit. It's one of the other parts that we get tied up in sometimes. It does transfer risk from the processor to the owner of the cattle. And that risk sometimes can be fairly significant. And the other thing that we look at and that we evaluate all the time at Cattle Facts is that these grids change all the time. They change every day. Now, the basic makeup of all that we're talking about here of a general grid or formula, I would say today, is not notably different. They're all basically put together the same way. I mean, there's some sort of a premium and discount structure, and they're going to reward for things and discount for things, but generally they're all put together. But it's the little subtle changes that you see from one program to the next that sometimes can mean a whole bunch of money. And that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to find and help producers and feeders pick the right program for the kind of cattle that they have that they can be successful in working towards those targets week in and week out. How do you maximize your returns? First and foremost, you got to be honest with what you have. Okay? And that's another mistake that I think that we've seen develop over time is that we all tend to think that we've got better cattle sometimes than we really have. Okay? If we're totally honest, we had that one stick out pin that one time, that one year that graded 80% choice, therefore they are all going to grade 80% choice. You've got to be honest when you're putting yourself into these programs, because you're going to be sorely disappointed if you get yourself in the wrong program with the wrong cattle. And it's tough to go through that, but you've got to be honest with what you have. You need to understand the market. Another mistake that we see is that people get so barn blind about marketing cattle on a grid or formula, and generally here what I'm talking about is the cow-calf producer. They have a program set up. They've got wonderful cattle that are going to grade 80% choice and 80% ones and twos, and they've got this program set up. They get them through the system, they feed them, and then they come out every year in July. And wonder why they don't think that they do quite as well as they should. Well, Bill's going to spend some time on the market and how it impacts what you do from a good marketing standpoint. whether you're marketing cattle live or marketing cattle on a grid or formula, there's certain months that, if at all possible, you want to avoid. Don and I talked about this at lunch here not too long ago, and just months you need to not have any cattle coming out if you can possibly do that. And that's one of the other things that really we need to understand. We need to understand the market, how it works, and how it impacts the overall profitability of any program, but particularly grid and formula marketing. And then again, we need to understand the program, the premiums versus the discounts, and make sure that we fit. Okay, where do we start? Do you have any history on the cattle? I tell you, number one, that if you don't, you do not have to feed the cattle yourself to get the information. Okay? You don't have to stand all that risk. If you don't have any information on your cattle today, you can get that information without having to do or put yourself together with all that risk. Okay? You can pay. If you've got some kind of relationship, or you can form some kind of a relationship with the next owner or owners of those cattle, you can find a way to capture some of that information that will help you. Feedlot performance, carcass characteristics, those are the two most important components of gathering data to help you determine and sort through where you want to go with the cattle. Once you have the data, I would say this. If it's just based on 1 or 2 years, you need to go back and be conservative with what you think the cattle will do that next year. Because maybe you found that, hey, everything was perfect for those 2 years. Feeding conditions, the way that the cattle hung up, everything was just perfect. And then that third year, you make some decisions based on those 2 years, get your cattle in a program that, well, they kind of fit, I think. And then that third or fourth year, whenever you're working through that, you don't have perfect conditions. And you end up with cattle that just don't fit in that program. So again, you got to be honest, and you need to be conservative as you go through the process of evaluating these different programs and looking at what is going to, again, fit the cattle that you have. I put this together just to illustrate feedlot performance. This is very simplistic, but it's a point that a lot of people miss. Okay? Pin number one, we're going to gain 3 pounds a day. We're going to convert at 6. We've got a cost to gain of 50 cents. Okay? $250 to put that gain on. Pin number two, gains 3.3, converts at 6.6, cost to gain at 55 cents. Pin number one's ahead by $25 before we even get started. Okay? I've got my average daily gains mixed up there on top. Okay? Howard? This should be 3.3 and the other one should be 3. If you guys want to make that change in your book. But that 10% difference right there is a huge deal. If you're starting off minus 25 bucks, believe me, that's going to be tough to make up on any grid or formula that you've got out there to work with. So that feedlot performance is an extremely important component before you even worry about how the cattle are going to grade or how they're going to, you know, look when it's all said and done. You can't forget about how they're going to do in the yard. And it's a critical component as we look through things. And frankly, it's a part of this that a lot of people overlook when they're first getting started. I'm going to turn things over to Bill real quick, and he's going to spend some time on looking at the market and how we look at it to kind of put some market perspective around grid and formula marketing.
Good morning. I don't know if you've noticed, but Mike and I are both hooked up to 2 separate microphones. We have a power surge, we're dead, and the marketing session's over for grid. Just to let you know. But what's the most important component of any price you get, whether you're marketing on a grid or not? It's your base price. And your base price is based off of market fundamentals that basically remain the same. We're going to go through the seasonality of supply and demand that is a big component in determining your base price. We'll go through the choice select spread. If you're going to market cattle on the grid, when it's a good time to shoot for the good choice select spread, when is it not a good time? Not only in selling them, but in buying feeders or calves that will go against those times. And then the timing of the marketing. Steer and heifer slaughter makes up about 80 to 82% of the total slaughter. Now, we're going to look at the time limit for this because price is related in a big way to steer and heifer slaughter. It's all about supplies. We start out at the beginning of the year, and basically we don't have many cattle that are ready, so our slaughter's lower. Also, what we get into is people are paying heating bills in January. We don't see a great big beef demand right now. So we don't have the demand that's growing through that time frame, and we don't have the numbers that are ready. Well, we pick up into February and March, what happens? It starts to warm up. And as it warms up, we start to see beef demand. So what does the market do? The market begins to appreciate in response to that beef demand. The packer says, I need cattle. I need to start paying a little more money for cattle. What does the board do? The board starts rallying, encouraging us to sell cattle. We start to see a profit. So we go out there and we find cattle. And we start increasing our supplies because demand is growing through this time frame initially in March and April. You'll see in a minute, but the Fed market typically finds a high February and March. We want to get them on there. We want to get them sold because that base price is important to us. Now, as we get into April and May, what do we start to see? We start to see calves. Supplies begin to grow. And demand is still good through here. What do we get at the end of May? We've got Memorial Day. Biggest steak holiday of the year. Does anybody know which one that is? It's Father's Day. It comes in early June. Then we've got July 4th. So through that whole time frame there, right in there, we've got demand that's very good, and we've got supplies, particularly as we get into April and May, that begin to grow. Well, what happens? We get into the summertime. Demand, when it gets hot, we don't want to fire up the grill. So after July 4th, we see beef demand starts to go down. Unfortunately, what happens then? Supplies go up. We've got cattle that were placed early here in February, March. They're ready to come out. They were placed in May. They come out towards the August-September time frame. We lose demand. It takes us a long time to chew through those cattle. So because of that, we've got high slaughter levels. Now, typically, if you see a Fed slaughter level or a steer and heifer slaughter level above 550,000 head per week, you've got a problem. Per week. 700,000 head this summer, and I just want to use this as an example. That was the total slaughter. We were over 550,000 head through this entire time frame. What did prices do through there this year? They were huge. Why? Well, we were the number one exporter of choice quality beef in the world. We took Canada out of the market. Our demand skyrocketed. We had the Atkins diet. Our domestic demand was great. So we were able to handle these higher numbers. But typically, as Mike alluded to earlier, you want to avoid this time frame when we've got heavy supplies. Now, as we get into the fall, what you see is we don't have cattle placed to come out against this time frame. The numbers begin to go down. Prices pick up. Demand improves. It's the thrill of the grill all over again. Cooler weather. We're having tailgate parties, and it's a great time of year to pick up. If we get into October, what are we doing? Well, our employees did such a great job this year, we want to buy them prime rib for Christmas party. We want to get them tenderloin. So you see that start to pick up too. And then with the lack of supplies, basically what we see is we go down in here, we're competing against pork and poultry, against the seasonal holidays, and then we improve with slaughter towards the end. But big function of your price. It's pretty simple. Supplies go up, base price goes down, regardless of whether you're marketing on a grid or not. It's going to have a huge effect on your profitability. And we look at beef production, and the only difference between beef production and slaughter levels is carcass weights. Slaughter times carcass weight is beef production. So you'll see that it follows a similar pattern, but there's some distinctions. Basically, as slaughter starts to pick up in here, its beef production is moderated a little bit because when a carcass weights their lowest, they're the lowest in May. Why are they lowest in May? Well, we've got a little winter weather on those cattle, and what are we doing? Well, we're killing calves. They're lighter. So the smaller carcass weights are moderating beef production a little bit, even though slaughter levels are growing. Biggest slaughter levels, we start getting into the summertime, cattle are performing well. These are yearlings that are coming out. So they boost beef production even more if slaughter levels are going higher. Finally, we get into the fall, this number should be going down. It's going down more dramatically if we just look at slaughter, but what are carcass plates doing in the fall? They're at their highest level on an annual basis in the fall. Because cattle have come through summer, we've got more yearlings, they're performing well. So it moderates that decline a little bit. Beef production is more a function of your effect on price than slaughter is. Carcass weights, basically for every 1 pound change in carcass weights, you've added 1,000 head to the slaughter per week. That's the equivalent. 2 years ago, in 2003, when we had carcass weights at record levels, were basically, 25 pounds higher than what we would have been a year ago? Doesn't take long to do the math, but basically 2 years ago, in 2002, we had the equivalent of 25,000 head more cattle per week because carcass weights were 25 pounds higher than they are today. So that's another fundamental factor that you want to look at. Now, in terms of weekly average beef production, if we get up above 550 million pounds, that's pretty high. That typically means we're in trouble. This year, we were able to handle it because of the tremendous demand. Now, if we get into a carryover situation and where we're not as current, these slaughter levels aren't keeping pace with where we need them to be, what are we going to do? We're going to add carcass weights. We're going to get into a problem in terms of base price. Look at the way we're buying feeders today. You know, some of you will call and tell me, what's the cheapest way to break up or cheap enough a break-even bill? It's add weight to the cap. That's the carcass weight issue. It's going to affect your base price. You want to watch that. Because if it becomes an industry trend, if we all decide to add weight to the cattle and we all start shooting for those choice select spreads, then we're going to reduce our base price and basically shoot ourselves in the foot doing it. Choice select spread, here's what we've done since 1990. New record this year, I'll talk about that in a minute. 1999, that was the previous record, and that was driven by demand for the Millennium Celebration. Huge demand there that helped that choice select spread hit its level. We were very good in 2001. Then we had the terrorist attack. The economy started to suffer. Demand dropped down a little bit. And then we recovered substantially this year. It was a function of two things this year that Mike talked about earlier. Profitability on fed cattle was absolutely tremendous this year. We had significant premiums in the front month. The market was telling us what? Get rid of the cattle now. Now, if you want to stick around and try to get another $2 to $3 a hundredweight and hold cattle for another 2 to 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, and risk the $300+ a head you're getting, go ahead. I'll pay you a pretty high choice select spread, but not a whole lot of guys are willing to take that risk. How many of you have seen profits as high as we saw them this year as cattle feeders? We've never seen them before in history. Why risk another $2 to $3 a hundredweight? So we had a lack of supply through this entire time frame. We were pulling cattle forward. They were green. We didn't have the age on them. We didn't have the marbling. And what also did we have? We had huge demand. We had great export demand. They want the higher quality. The Japanese aren't interested in select cuts. They want higher grading choice and prime cuts. We had good demand here at home. I went to a restaurant last night, and the sign over the kitchen as we were walking out the door said, Dr. Atkins Research Center. That's been a big deal for us. But those combinations, the lack of supply and the big demand, that's what took us to all-time levels. Now, can we expect to stay up here? No, we can't. I don't think we're going to be as current. I would expect this year that we're probably going to run closer to $10 to $11 a hundredweight in the choice select spread, maybe $9. Over time, that spread typically, and you can see it through here, averages $7 to $9 per hundredweight. Now, the other thing I want to tell you is that we have a pretty good indication of what supply is, we as an industry. We can see that coming. What is the one thing that we can't measure effectively? It's demand. We cannot effectively measure demand. One of the best indicators that we have with what little we can do is the choice select spread in terms of demand. And you can hindsight it now, but you can go back and look at the years where the choice select spread was wider and say that was a good demand year for beef.
If you want to think about volatility, this last year the choice select spread ranged from a low of $4 a hundredweight early in 2003 to a high of nearly 40 late in the year. I mean, so if you know, we had a wild ride, obviously, from a market standpoint, but if you're a grid marketer selling every week, man, you had a probably even a wilder ride over the course of time. And that's really the reason that we think that this choice select spread is going to moderate in 2004, because we don't think at any time this year we're going to see a choice select spread anywhere near what we saw this last fall.
We started off the year with one of our, well, basically with our three biggest export customers were out of the market. So that's one reason why. We're not as current as what we were. Carcass weights will probably start to increase a little bit. That's another reason why we think we'll see more short supply. All right, here's the seasonality. And we know that it's extremely important to your base price as far as supply and beef production and that seasonality. If you're going to market cattle on a grid, this is extremely important also. When do we hit our peak? We hit our peak in May. And that's a function of lack of supply. It's the calves that we were talking about, not as much marbling, and extremely good demand. The packer comes in, he's buying for Memorial Day. He's buying for Father's Day. He's buying for an extremely good time period here in May and June. So we see a point that if you want to try to shoot for an area to market cattle on the grid that are going to grade well in terms of quality, that's one you want to shoot for in this time frame. And I'm going to talk about this decline as we get into fed cattle prices. Another one, we get into the fall, demand improves again with the cooler weather, lack of supply. How many people have cattle that are going to grade well coming out in October? Why is that so high? This is extremely hard to do. It is very hard to do. So it's primarily driven by lack of supply during this time frame, and we see it goes down through here. Now, it's pretty simple as you look at it. If I'm going to sell on the grid and I've got quality cattle, I want to shoot for here and I want to shoot for there. Where do I want to stay away from? I don't want to come down in these areas, not in here during the summertime, for two reasons, not just the small choice select spread, but also the base price, and then finally towards the end of the year. Now that's important if you're selling cattle. What if you're buying cattle? Do you want to pay a good premium for black cattle if they're going to come out in here or in here? No. Because chances are you may not get the return that you pay for that premium on those feeders or those calves. If you've got one that's going to come out against this time frame, sure, you need to think about paying a premium. But don't go out and buy black cattle or good grading cattle if they're not going to hit one of these because you're thinking about marketing them on the grid. You've got to stay away from that seasonality.
One thing that I would add here, you've got it actually right here, but if you want to flip back real quick, the one thing that I would add, the two components that you need to look at, is that if you just look at the choice select spread as a decision-making tool of when you want to market good cattle, okay, and let's just say that we're marketing cattle that we're going to grade 70% choice, and we know that we're going to get a good premium, you've got to balance this with what the market typically does. Because I'm there to guarantee you that the market will override any premium that you're going to get. You just can't make that up. Okay? So you've got to balance the two. Yes, you want to try to take advantage, if at all possible, of these bigger spreads with the kind of cattle that you have, particularly if they're the right kind of cattle. But you've got to balance that in relation to what the market does. Okay? And what I'm alluding to is that you've got to build some flexibility into your program. Okay? You've got to find ways to be flexible. If you're stuck hard and fast every year into a certain marketing window, you're just going to be kind of in a tough spot because you need to be able to move that marketing, that final marketing window around at least 3 or 4 months if at all possible to be able to take advantage of the different market conditions that might be available from year in and year out. Now, once you start down that path, it's going to be pretty difficult to move them around 3 or 4 months. But you need to plan and you need to look at long-term trends in the spread, long-term trends in the market, the typical seasonality, and figure out, if at all possible, marketing windows that will, over time, help you achieve the best profits possible.
We should have the overlay here. What we should have is the choice select spread with the seasonality of the fed cattle market. But it follows beef production. Again, as supplies grow, You're going to have prices that are lower in through here, high supplies, good demand, higher. You get the spring highs typically coming in March and April. And this is the one thing that I want to point out here, and probably the biggest reason for why I'm here today, is don't lose the forest for the trees. If you decide you want to market cattle on the grid, and you think, I've got to go after that really good choice select spread there in May, well, if you sit on the seesaw too long, guess what happens? Your base price starts falling out of bed, and you've given up all the premium you tried to achieve by hanging on to those cattle too long. You cannot forget about the fundamentals and the base price, because they're the biggest return will come from that. Get into the summertime, and again, we saw the choice select spread fading, but you want to stay away from that time frame. June, July, August, September, supplies are growing, demand is not good. We struggle. We really struggle during the summertime. This year was probably the biggest exception in history to that rule. These fundamentals are very strong. Why are they strong? That's another thing I wanted to touch on. When do we calve? How many of the nation's producers calve in the spring? 75%. So it's no magic why prices are low here and why they're higher here and here. It's tough to get around. If it were simple, it's the same old thing. Everybody would be doing it.
I think one other thing to mention there, and generally speaking, based on what we know about grid and formula marketing, if we took a poll in here, what would we say the average premium in terms of dollars per head is achieved in grid and formula marketing today? $15? $20? I mean, based on our experiences and based on who we talk to, is that fair? Let's just use 25. Let's say that on average, the people that hit the targets are getting $25 a head premium to the average. That's $2 a hundredweight. Okay. How quickly can the market trend $4, $5, $6 a hundredweight lower once we get into that summer rush that we think, oh man, we've got way too many cattle coming?
It's a psychological game, too. Remember, psychology can often drive the market. I don't think anybody would dispute that. And unless you're a psychologist, and we don't claim to be, it's tough to do. Fundamentals would suggest you need to do this and you need to do that, but psychology is ultimately what's going to drive the market in volatile times. The one thing I would say, too, and I want to go back to the example of how you want to buy cattle. I'm fortunate enough to deal with a lot of great cattle feeders that I work with, and I've got some in particular that they'll buy the best calves, the greatest calves, all black, grade extremely well, stand up and bark like a dog, and talk Spanish if they need to. But the problem is that when he calls and says, you know, I got the cattle, I got my return back, and I had X that went prime, I had X that went CAD, I had X that went this, what premium did you pay for those calves? What did you net after you paid the premium for those calves? And most guys don't think about that. So you've got to consider it. If you're going to get those higher priced calves, and I'm not telling you not to do it, I'm telling you to consider your net return, not your gross return, when you get the sheep back in pack. Yes, sir.
One factor,
the age gap, 55%
choice, 75% choice. People look at what they pay extra for, and calculate the fact.
Tough to pencil.
It can be tough. But again, it's one of those things that frankly our industry, sometimes, portions of our industry, we get caught up in talking about the premium that we get. That's what we're going to talk about. Well, gosh, fed these cattle and I got a $3 price. I got a $4 premium to the market. Well, that's great. And we're glad that those kinds of premiums are available, but the bottom line is we're talking about maximizing profits here, not maximizing premiums. We want to maximize profits. And again, our hope is that over time, those two things match. We're gonna finish up here and spend some time talking about some of the trends that we see going on, and just kind of go back and visit, touch on some of the things that we've already talked about. Again, what fits your cattle? What program fits your cattle? Change the grid to the cattle, not the cattle to the grid. There's plenty of programs out there available for all kinds of cattle, okay? Yeah, there's probably some cattle out there that won't fit very well on some programs, so we got to be honest about that. But we've got a lot of programs out there available to producers and cattle feeders around the country. Now, there are limitations based on the location of where the cattle are, and that's another thing that you've got to understand when you go through this. Quality grade versus yield grade tends to be kind of a factor that you need to choose. You need to decide which kind of target you're going to shoot for. Where are the cattle going to be fed? Okay, let's be honest. What state today probably has the most options as it relates to grid and publicly traded grids today? Let's just use north versus south. Where do we have most of them? North. We have a little more flexibility north today. That doesn't mean we don't have flexibility south, but today we've got more of these different kinds of things north. The problem is that the programs in the north tend to all look alike. They're very similar in the way that they're put together and how they're going to reward the kinds of cattle. Now, I could also say the same thing if you move further south. They tend to be a lot alike. Okay? But that's one of the things that you need to think about. If you're going to retain ownership on your calves for the first time, where are you going to feed them?
Also, along those lines, you've got to consider performance in the feedlot. Also, in the north, what are you going to do? You're going to compete against better quality cattle, more than likely. So if you go on a plant average, it's what we mentioned earlier. You could have cattle that grade extremely well, but not get much of a premium for those.
And another one, and this is, I guess it relates to a lot of the alliances and some of those programs that are out there today, is you need to evaluate how much it's going to cost to be involved. Some of them cost several dollars per head. Some of them not quite so much. In a lot of cases, you can feed cattle at a certain feed yard and not pay a thing to market the cattle on some kind of a grid or formula. So those are all things that you need to evaluate as you're looking at these different programs. Analyze the premium and discount structure. Okay? We've got a little tool on our website. We have a couple of tools. Well, let's talk about the first one first. We have one that's called Grid Wizard. And you can get in there and you can plug in formulas. You can plug in premiums and discounts and look at those different structures and say, look, this is what I think my cattle will do. Play with those numbers and see what the net result is to try to give you some guidance as to which direction you need to go if you don't have a feel for it. Whether or not you need to be shooting for a high-quality program or something that maybe is going to reward more for yield grade. But you need to find those things out. Again, fixed grade base versus plant averages. We talked about that earlier, and at least you know where I stand, and I think ultimately the way that we get rewarded best is for a broader base to be judged against than a specific plant average. Okay, plant averages sometimes are tough because, again, you've got cattle that are wonderful, they did it all, but because you're going against all these other cattle that did exactly the same thing, you don't get rewarded for those cattle. Choice select spread, how does it get determined? Okay, this is another thing that you need to look into. Okay, is it at a specific plant, at a specific packer, is it a price that they just determine internally? Okay, or is it a USDA quoted spread? Okay, we tend to like USDA quoted spread because, you know, there's not going to be any question over any manipulation there. But if you're using an internal one, sometimes there's always going to be that question of, well, you know, the USDA spread's at $10 and you're saying that yours is only $8, you know, what's the deal? And those are the kinds of things that you get into sometimes with the internal spread. And again, how are we going to determine the base price? All of those are different things that you've got to evaluate as you look into this. Some of the different trends that we see. We're going to be gathering more information as it relates to these different programs. One of the trends that I would say that I think is going to be pretty evident here in the next couple of years is there's going to be more fine-tuning of how those carcass characteristics get measured. I think we're going to have more premiums and discounts. For instance, today, if a carcass is a 2.9 yield grade, it gets called a 2. Okay? Well, the one right next to it is a 3 or a 3.1. There's really hardly any difference, but there's a big difference in the way that those carcasses get evaluated. We think that there's going to be probably a price for every 2/10, maybe every quarter, but maybe 2/10, maybe every 10th. As we go through here, that a 2.1 is going to be a little bit higher than a 2.2, than a 2.3, than a 2.4, and so on. We're already breaking up the quality grade, the chore grade, today. We've got upper 2/3. Sometimes we've got upper half. We have a whole bunch of things there going on. Sometimes we've got upper 1/3 of select versus the lower 1/3 of choice, and it'll be a different price than the lower 2/3 of select. So we've got a lot of different moving parts that are still impacting us today. Obviously, all those different trends are going to have an impact on genetic selection. But this has taken a while, and it's interesting to look at the trends and look at the numbers and say, gosh, we're still not quite hitting the mark as we look at it today. We need to more objectively measure those things that you're going to be paid for and held accountable for. Okay? Today, basically, we're still doing most everything visually. Our hope is that we get to a point where we've got more objective measurements. Okay, all right. Both in terms of red meat yield and modeling. Okay, one that we don't talk about. What does our consumer tell us that they want in our product above everything else? It is not choice. They want it to be tender. Okay? And we know from research and all the meat analysis that's been done is that we don't have a great correlation between cattle at grade choice and tenderness. I mean, it's there. It's not zero, but it's not foolproof at all either. And so that's a piece to this whole puzzle that we obviously need to incorporate. Our hope is at some point here in the very near future that we're going to have that measurement to where a select yield grade 1 carcass that is extremely tender will achieve a nice premium because it's the right kind of product. Today, that's not quite the way our system's built and the way that it works, but ultimately, that's the way that we think we're headed. And hopefully, we'll be able to get there here soon. We talked about base prices and how they're going to be determined over time. One quick note here on value discovery and how it's working. We think that over time, we're going to see bigger and bigger discounts. But we think that we're also going to see some bigger premiums for the right kinds of things. Okay? In some cases, maybe a lot, not a lot bigger, because we're already seeing cases where we're being discounted $30 a hundred for the wrong kind. Okay? Cattle that don't fit. But we think that those are generally the trends as we work through this. The different messages that are being sent through the industry, you know, today, the more and more cattle that we sell on a grid or a formula ultimately send the message back to the industry that there are some cattle that are better than others. Okay? It's not a clear-cut message, but that's generally what we're doing as an industry. We're trying to sort out what we want from what we don't want. Those messages are very mixed today, but at least we're getting to a point where we're saying, because of the price that's achieved, that we do have some cattle that are more acceptable than others. And hopefully that will move our industry ahead as we try to provide our consumers with a higher quality product and one that ultimately is more consistent. We share a lot of information, and that's another factor as you look and evaluate whether or not you want to. Okay? So there's the grid marketing. One of the things that I like about grid marketing is that you get some information. Okay? You tend to get some information that can be helpful to you over time. Now, we've got a lot of members that market on grids and formulas and a lot of members that don't. But from an information standpoint, I would tell you that those that do it tend to be pretty good information managers. They've got a lot of things at their fingertips that they can use to make management decisions over time, and that information can be very helpful as your business and your operation evolve over time. What are the trends? More and more. You can see in really the mid-90s, we were probably talking somewhere between 20 and 30% of all the cattle that were sold or marketed from cattle feeders to the pasture on some sort of a formula or grid. You can see that we're up above 50% in 2002. We had a little dip in 2003 because of the market conditions. Well, 2004, our expectations were probably going to sell a few more that way and continue to see that grow over time. It's definitely a trend that we see. Now, this is interesting to me. That right there is the 10-year average of the USDA carcasses that grade choice. It's 52.75%. In only four of the last 8 or 9 years have we beat the average. But we're sending the right signals, right? Yeah. I don't know. We're not changing the bottom line here. And the bottom line is we think, with the different programs that we have out there today, is to make them choice, right? Yeah. Probably not quite. What we're hearing as an industry is make them heavy. Okay? That's what we're hearing. That's really where the dollars tend to be still. And we can't get away from the fact that what we're ultimately selling is pounds. So again, this is something else that I would watch over time. Our expectation is that in 2004, we're probably going to bounce back here and probably get back to the average. But it's interesting to see how that's really not moving. Now, this is another interesting one. We actually have fewer yield grade 1s and 2s and more 3s and 4s. Now, that goes back to the fact that what we're doing is we're selling weight. We're reacting to weight. Now, Bill, this afternoon, is going to talk to us about grain prices. And I'll give you a little preview. He's going to try to scare the bejesus out of you. Okay? Now, you have a run-up in grain price over the course of time. Maybe it moderates both carcass weight and the number of 3s and 4s that we see in the system. Okay? Because we may feed cattle a little less. Fewer days. Like we did this last year. But again, this is a really interesting trend that we see over time. We've talked about carcass weights. And it's one of the strongest trends that we see in the industry today, and we're going to continue to see it over time. I think ultimately what we're talking about here today, and it's a decision that we all have to make, is we have to determine where is it that we fit. Okay? And it's not easy. And I tell you that, and I knew that when I was putting this together, Bill and I started talking about what we were going to share with you today. And we wanted to come away with some clear-cut answers. And the challenge is, that as it relates to grid and formula marketing, is there are none. It's a moving target. It's something you have to evaluate. You have to sit down. You have to look at the different programs. You have to look at what you're doing. You have to evaluate for yourself. There's some big pitfalls that you can avoid. There's some things that you have to consider, that all of us have to consider. But ultimately, you have to evaluate your program for yourself. And we hopefully have been able to share with you some things today that will help you do that. Now, I'm going to get here to the end, and I'm going to ask Jim Norwood to step up here just for a minute. One of the other things that we have at our fingertips today, we have a relationship with Jim and his company, and there's a program out there, and I want you to, if you get a chance, I want you to go out and look at it. www.grid-max.net. Okay? What it allows you to do, and you can call our office and we can help you get set up, what it helps you to do is to evaluate almost in real time what's going on with some of the major packers and the real-time or kind of grids that are publicly available today, and you can evaluate your cattle and how they might perform. Okay? It's a tool that anybody can use, even if you're not going to market cattle but once a year. you can start to look at those different grids and how they move around, and you can look at beginning to make some evaluations on, you know, maybe where you might want to look. Jim, you want to step up here and just give them a feel real quick? I don't think we ever got our internet connection, but if you want to give them a flavor.
Oh, yeah, might be able to get it.
I'm going to step up there. Just give them a quick idea.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here and work with this session on grids. Grids are something that's almost a passion for me. As a result, a partner and I have built this program called GridMax. GridMax will let you look on a weekly basis at what your cattle would do on the different grids you want to look at compared to cash. It's always compared to cash, because that's the standard. You can enter your own cattle through actual carcass data if you have it from a previous time. Or you can make an estimate of what you think those cattle will do based upon quality grade and yield grade. There are about 30 different grids in there at the current time that you can compare to. There are also proprietary grids for groups that have their own formula, belong to a co-op, such as the Tama grid in Iowa. You have to be a co-op member in order to participate. Those members can have access to that through this program. You don't have to worry about the trends. You don't have to worry about what the choice select spread is. You don't have to worry about what somebody's doing for yield grades. That's all done for you. That's why it's on a website. Those are updated on a weekly basis. When you look at the answer is for what Califax thinks cash is going to be this week and what that translates into base price, etc., for cattle that would go to a grid next week. In the year or so that we have worked with GridMax, we have found that while most feeders are somewhat computer literate, they aren't quite as much as you might think. We have taken this and made it more user-friendly and allowed people to get the answer for their cattle with the grids they look at in a weekly email that comes on Monday morning. So all you have to do is be able to get email and you can benefit from GridMax.
We can custom fit it. And basically what we do is, as you call us and say you're interested in getting the weekly email, we get plants that would be tributary to your area, even if you're a cow-calf producer and you feed at a certain feedlot. Give us some plants that would be tributary to where you're feeding your cattle. We'll figure the freight for those plants, because obviously that's a factor in your net price. And then each Monday morning, based upon our assumptions of the Fed prices, the base prices, you'll get the net results according to where your cattle are located, the freight to each plant, and how they would have graded relative to the other packers.
So let me tell you how you do this. Our number at CattleFax is 1-800-825-7525. Call us up, ask to talk to either Bill or myself, and we'll walk you through the process, and we'll have you up and running in no time. It's a nice tool. We're excited and have been excited about the opportunity to work with Jim and his group on GridMax. And again, as it relates to trying to break down some of the mindsets, break down some of the ideas that we have about grid and formula marketing, I think this is going to be a valuable tool. Hopefully, over time, we're going to be able to add more grids to the system and be able to give you even more choices to kind of work against. Yes, sir. No.
Anybody hear the question?
The question was whether or not we make any assumptions as to plant performance, and Jim can probably tell you exactly what it is we're doing there.
When you ask that, the question about plant performance, what do you mean? Dressing percent?
10 percent.
Okay, the question is, can we, in the program, adjust for differences in plant performance? You can adjust for differences in dressing percent yourself. We're not going to make an assumption that Swift versus IBP, Dumas versus Garden City, we can't make that assumption. But if you market enough cattle that way, and your kind of cattle, you probably have a feel and you can adjust that. Quality grade, that's a tough one. What I would recommend is you run a set of cattle at, let's say, grade 60% choice, the identical traits of a set that makes 70% choice, print out both sheets, and then you can compare if you think there's that much difference between grade.
Okay, we're ready for other questions. If you have a short question, please stand and state it so everyone can hear. If you have a long question, please come to the mic. Time for questions.
While people are waiting to do a question, one other thing I need to mention, I see Evan sitting here in the crowd. GridMax is a joint venture with CattleFax and GridMax. They're the owners of GridMax. We have made an agreement with the Iowa Cattlemen's, and so if you're from Iowa, you're a member of Iowa Cattlemen's, see Evan Vermeer, and you can get access to GridMax through them.
Yes. What are you seeing as the goal of cage ready products? A lot of these places are taking lesser cuts of meat, a lot of places are taking lesser cuts, upgrading some of their further processing and different cage ready. Is that going to eventually narrow or expand so it's very small?
Can you summarize that question, please? I don't think those are back her.
Okay. The question was in our industry's move towards case-ready product to further processed product. The idea is generally what we're doing in further processing is we're upgrading the product. Okay, we're taking lesser cuts of beef and upgrading them through some process to make them better eating quality, and whether or not that's going to impact the choice select spread over time. I don't think so. Let me tell you why. Generally what they're doing there is they are upgrading a lot of cuts out of the chuck and the round. Okay? Some middles, but a lot of chuck and round. The choice select spread almost in its entirety is driven by the difference between choice middles and select middles. Okay? And the people that demand choice middles don't want to necessarily, we'll put it this way, they don't want that product necessarily change in any way. I mean, it's our high-end steakhouses, it's our high-end retail stores around the country that want choice middles, that demand choice middles. We're going to have some of that. And in fact, it's probably helping us in some cases, upgrading that product to where it's a little better eating quality. I don't think long-term it's going to impact our choice select spread that much. But it could, particularly at times when it's $35. I mean, You think about a big food service company around the country that's been using choice product, okay? You got the hell scared out of you this last fall, okay? You did. Think about a high-end restaurant that used prime. You know, there was parts of the country that actually, the restaurants in October and early November around the country that closed their doors for several nights a week because they couldn't get prime product, okay? Now, is there some incentive there because of that and those circumstances to say, you know, maybe I can do something a little bit different? Now, the prime guys are not going to move away from prime. The CAB guys are not going to move away from CAB or any other kind of premium type product. But choice and select, you know, there's going to be some people that look at select probably and maybe try and find a way to change it to where it works a little bit better for them. I don't think it's going to impact the spread much.
Other questions? Yes.
One problem with cage band is we already flattened down the trap because it was a donkey, so we had to try to buy it local. And we're great 75-10 choice, pretty easy to do. But then I kind of look at my CABs, and I've only got just a handful, and maybe 15 head or less. And so the problem is I'm not getting that up to two-thirds choice. All of them sitting in that choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's not
much premium. Did y'all hear the comment in the back?
I'm sorry,
they can't hear you in the back.
The comment was this, is that the buying cattle out of the south, they're black, good quality cattle. They're grading about 75% choice, but he's not getting very many or a very small percentage that end up qualifying CAB or whatever kind of premium program. And that's one of the things that he's wrestling with, is how to get those cattle into that upper two-thirds of choice to where you achieve that better premium than what you're getting in the lower third of choice. I guess I don't have any answers. I know that we've talked to people that have had that challenge before, and you know, it's probably related to a whole lot of different things, Don. Yeah.
Other questions? Yes, right here.
You were saying that the, in essence, the reference grade and so on, and the consumers were telling you that you wanted, that there was a demand for the choice or the upper two-thirds choice, and yet in your presentation when you were talking about the choice select spread, you indicated that you didn't think it was going to go much higher, but if there is that demand, and I think the trend over the last 10 years has been getting wider all of the time, but you indicated in essence, I think, in your comments, that you didn't think it was going to get any higher.
Any higher than a year ago.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
yeah, it could.
Don't forget supply.
Yeah, the challenge that we end up with there again is that, again, we're deriving all that choice select spread from the choice middles, and that's a rub, okay, that we continue to deal with. That's why I'll tell you frankly that I'm surprised that trend in the percentage of cattle that grade choice isn't ticking up. I would have thought that with all the different signals and all the different talk that this industry's been through in the last 10 years about increasing the quality of the cattle, that we wouldn't see an improvement in the quality grade. And so maybe what ends up happening, and I tell you that part of that's going on today, is that for a period of time, particularly in the spring of the year and in the fall of the year, when we really do fall short of demand, we have very, very big swings in the choice select spread, and the volatility is really pronounced, and I think we're going to continue to see that. I think the trend in the choice select spread is going to ease higher, but I think that for a period of time here, we'll probably step between $8 and $10 annually, but we may see some pretty big wide swings around that spread over the course of the year.
We think, too, supplies of choice cattle will go high. We don't think we'll be as current. We don't think the market structure will be such that we'll aggressively pull cattle forward and have less marbling in the cattle like we did a year ago. So that's a big part of our assumption as to why we think it'll back off a little bit.
In 2004.
Right.
Okay. Another one. Mike, Bill, we are 5 minutes over. We'll take one more question. A quick question, please. Question, what defines the upper two-thirds of choice?
It's a call by the USDA. It's the amount of marbling. Okay, it's a call that has been defined by the USDA and has been certified, and so it's just the amount of marbling relative to the lower third that ends up having those cattle qualified.
Let's thank Mike and Bill for their job.